Live on your Thursday morning. And in about a half hour on Words and Pictures, award-winning author Gene Luen Yang talks about his new historical epic, Boxers and Saints, which was a hit at the recent Wordstock Literary Festival. But first, at 11 on Between the Covers, today's guest is Seattle naturalist and author Leanda Lynn Haupt. And that is coming up on The Mighty Boo.
You are about to cross the border.
Tune into KBOO this coming Monday, October 14th from 8 to 10 p.m. when members of the Different Nature Collective present Different Voices. Here are some of the most unusual and challenging uses of the human voice in new music. Sound poetry in which the conventions of melody and meaning melt into a different reality. Join us for this KBOO Fall Membership Drive special. That's Different Voices on KBOO's A Different Nature, Monday, October 14th from 8 to 10 p.m.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers. Those of us who live in an urban setting may not think much about the wildlife that is around us at all times. The creatures in the urban wild range from the noisy crows in the tops of the trees to the savvy raccoons that may be going through our garbage cans to the occasional coyote who shows up on urban streets. My guest, nature writer Leanda Lynn Haupt, explores this urban wild in her new book, The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild. Leanda Lynn Haupt is a Seattle naturalist and eco-philosopher. She has created and directed educational programs for Seattle Audubon, and she is a seabird researcher for the Fish and Wildlife Service. She is the author of the award-winning books Crow Planet, Pilgrim on the Great Bird Continent, and Rare Encounters with Ordinary Birds. Leanda Lynn Haupt, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Talk a little bit about the inspiration for this book, The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild.
I passionately believe that daily connection with the natural wild world makes us as humans more intelligent, it makes us healthier, makes us more vibrant, and even makes us happier. But I think it's important for us to realize, because all of these things are true, especially the connection to our health, which is being borne out in science these days, it's important for us to realize that we can find that connection in our daily lives. And if we really had to go to the far-flung wilderness to connect with nature, then we'd all be in a lot of trouble. And it's my belief that we can, through attention to the natural wild animals that live in our neighborhoods, that we can find that continuity with wilder nature. But there's actually a personal dimension to it as well, because I grew up as a naturalist, really, as an ardent student of the natural world and birds in particular. And I went to school and I studied environmental ethics and I studied conservation biology. And I just knew that in my future, I'd be living in some, you know, funky cabin at the edge of the woods somewhere, and there'd be deer, and my daughter would go to a nice hippie Waldorf school, and we'd all be barefoot, you know, have a cow. And instead, my husband works for this really lovely global health nonprofit based in Seattle. And so I found myself living in with good reason in the city. But at the same time, when I realized that our city dwelling was pretty permanent for the foreseeable future, I became really desolate and melancholic. And so it's kind of an irony that pulled me out of it. One day I finally realized, you know, I know more about lowland mountain gorillas. I know more about rare migratory warblers that I can only find far away than I do about the crow or the eastern gray squirrel that lives right outside my window. And these are animals that I could study for a lifetime and still only be scratching the surface of what there is to know about them. And so I really threw myself into studying the wildlife around me, the everyday wildlife, with the same passion and the same level of interest and the same attention that I would normally have given to animals we consider more remotely wild.
The urban bestiary. What is a bestiary?
A bestiary was a form of...
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers. Those of us who live in an urban setting may not think much about the wildlife that is around us at all times. The creatures in the urban wild range from the noisy crows in the tops of the trees to the savvy raccoons that may be going through our garbage cans to the occasional coyote who shows up on urban streets. My guest, nature writer Lyanda Lynn Haupt,
about them. And so I really threw myself into studying the wildlife around me, the everyday wildlife, with the same passion and the same level of interest and the same attention that I would normally have given to animals we consider more remotely wild.
The urban bestiary. What is a bestiary?
A bestiary was a form of book that was born in medieval times. They were giant kind of folio-size books inscribed on vellum, and they were compendiums of animal lore. So basically collections of everything that was known about animals. And they were created in the way that you, in your imagination, would think of them being created, you know, by medieval monks in stony, cold monasteries with candles for light and quills for pens. But the people that developed the contents of the bestiaries were the medieval scientists. And it was science in medieval times was super interesting. So these were people that would take really good observation of the natural world, and they'd learn what they could through that. And then any gaps they would fill in with what they imagined to be true or what they just simply made up and wrote down. And there was no effort in these old bestiaries to tease out, you know, which was the observed fact and which was the imagined or conjured. And there was also always a layer of allegory, typically, you know, biblical morality attached to the lessons that we were being taught about animal lives.
Did you want to provide something like that for the urban dweller? Or how did you change what you observed in those volumes and what you did?
Right. Well, I did not imagine or conjure or make anything up for my book. But what really inspired me was this idea that I wanted to bring a new sensibility to the way that we observe wild animals. It seems like if you want to learn something more about a bird that you see, you go to a field guide and name it, and you're, you know, then you consider yourself finished. you know what it is. But really, there's so much more. So the so much more can include science and scientific research, which is fascinating. But I think in the case of the human relationship to animals, it also includes a rich history of mythology, of folklore, of art, of song, and even of everyday storytelling, the kinds of stories we share and that we're coming to share, you know, that were once shared around a fire and eventually shared around a dinner table and now shared in social media. So I think that all of those beautiful ways of human knowing and communication of knowledge can be brought to bear in our observations of our, you know, everyday wildlife in our neighborhoods. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, I don't have to really create a completely new form. I named it a bestiary because it is in a way an homage to that medieval form.
At the beginning of the book, you list the animals that you observed while you were writing this book, and it's quite extensive. Do you think anyone could observe that many species or different kinds of animals if they just became more observant?
Oh, absolutely. So this is the fourth book I've written, and I decided that one of the ways I was going to throw myself into the process was to write the book outdoors as much as possible. So I'm from Seattle. My weather is really similar to yours in Portland. It's kind of rainy, kind of dreary sometimes. So I actually, we have a little, you know, backyard, and we have a fire pit, and I would build fires back there, and I'd put fingerless gloves on and hats and sit around the fire and work with my, you know, write in the rain notebook, that paper that you can still write on when it's wet. Or I would, if it was nicer, I'd use my laptop. And so it was really a funny way to write a book because I got so distracted by all the life that was kind of wandering around me. And it was just a backyard, so I don't want to make it sound like I wasn't seeing coyotes and raccoons, although I did see them at other times during the year that I wrote the book. The list that you're referring to, I just thought it would be fun to make a list of the animals that I saw while I was writing, like not during the time frame, but actually while I had pen to mm-hmm. paper and was working on the chapters of the book. It was over an extensive period of time. And you'll see that there are only a few mammals because I mean, I was in my backyard or maybe at a city park in Seattle. And as common as opossums and raccoons and coyotes are, just because we sit ourselves down in the city doesn't mean we're going to see them pass by, and usually doesn't. So the mammals I saw were simply that introduced eastern gray squirrel. And because I live in West Seattle by water, mm-hmm. I saw harbor seals and California sea lions as well. So, but most of them were birds, as you notice. So that's one of the things if you want to get started and sort of attention to the natural world in our neighborhoods, birds are the place to start because they, you know, they're all around us. I could look out the window on any given day from where I write in my house in Seattle and see 20 different species without getting out of my chair.
I'm speaking with nature writer Lyanda Lynn Haupt about her new book, The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild, on Between the Covers here on KBOO Radio. And by the way, Lyanda's book, The Urban Bestiary, is available as a thank you gift when you pledge to KBOO this hour. We are joined now by Lynn and Ani, who are going to share some ways you can support Between the Covers and KBOO.
Thank you so very much, Kathleen. It is, in fact, time to support KBOO, your community radio station here in the greater Cascadia area, and really anywhere. You can pick us up online at kboo.fm. Oh yeah, you could also join us while you're listening online at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up the phone right now and give us a dial at 877-500-5266 and let us know you'd like to be thanked with a copy of The Urban Bestiary. You're listening to the interview. You can pick up the book. It's pretty delightful.
And it's so exciting. I was waiting for this all morning, this interview. And for a $60 minimum donation, you too can have this book. I mean, we live around, I love her point, we live around squirrels. We live around birds. Of course, Ani's very favorite thing on the planet. And it just sort of wraps itself so well into to the community that we are at KBOO.
It's true.
It's the folks in your neighborhood. It's not the people that are from the New York
right.
affiliate.
Noticing what's around us and being yes. appreciative of what's around yeah. us in our everyday life, actually being observant of what matters and what is in our own backyard. Well, you know, yes, you can notice the birds, and I have to say they enrich your life tremendously. You can also notice your community and your community radio station. We are your grassroots-supported independent media resource here on the broadcast dial, and you right now are an important part of keeping us going and keeping us alive. It's time for you to step in and fill in the gap with your community radio station that is your community support. That's 877-500-5266, keeping it true to the grassroots, true to the community, with your contribution. 877-500-5266.
And this is a show that authors love to be interviewed for. I hear often, "You read the book." Yes, at KBOO, we actually read the books and have amazing, intelligent conversations with the authors that are not interrupted by commercials. Today, they're interrupted by us asking you to help the station remain on the air. 877-500-5266. We ask politely, and we offer gifts. We offer gifts for your contribution. The Urban Bestiary, Encountering Everyday Wildlife, is just going to be such a treat for you. This is another one of those things that could be a good gift for the holiday season. I'm just saying.
It's
but
true.
You got to do it. You got to call 877-500-5266.
And when you do that, you will get us closer to that goal of $250
right.
for Between the Covers this morning. That is a goal that ends at 11:30 when we start anew for Words and Pictures. So do please call us right now to support Between the Covers and pick up a copy of The Urban Bestiary. It's a fabulous book. And again, It's so important to really start noticing how we interact. We live in the real world. We live in the wild world. We think that we've actually paved over it and that the wildness is gone, but it's actually there in surprising numbers if only we know how to look for it and how to, in fact, acknowledge that it exists and that it matters. Bringing forward the unseen, that is what KBOO does best. Give us a call and support that effort, 877-500-5266 or online, KBOO.FM.
I'm speaking with nature writer Lyanda Lynn Haupt about her new book, The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild. When you're talking about the wild in the urban setting, you get into some philosophical questions such as, whose home is this? And where does the wild end and the city begin? After writing this book, how do you look at those questions? I know those are big questions, but that dynamic that runs through your book about those issues.
You know what? I came out with fewer answers to those questions than I went in with this. One of the things that I learned about the urban wilderness is that there is no black and white. There is no one right answer. People say, what should I do when, you know, I see a coyote? Should I feed birds? Should I? And there are all these gray areas to these questions when you try to answer these questions. And so one of the things that I learned in a question like, where does the wild end and the city begin? That there's no answer to that question. It's an interweaving, it's an unfolding story. And we are participants in the eventual answer to that question. I mean, I think that in the last decade to decade and a half, for the first time in human history, more humans are living in urban places than in rural places globally. So it's relatively new. We've left behind the sort of practical knowledge we had about how to live on the land. And we've built these new lives where we have, you know, concrete roads and these nice walls that are supposed to protect us. And first birds come in and squirrels. And now we've got coyotes and raccoons coming in. And it's very confusing to know exactly what to do. So we've got that kind of new urban situation. At the same time, we're in this kind of vibrant, you know, intellectual community period where, I mean, look around us. We're putting gardens in the parking strips. We're putting chickens in our backyards. We're inventing cottage industries. We're making all of this stuff up as we go along, how to build more creative, intelligent, sustainable communities. And so in doing all of those things, we are going to decide whether or not the places that humans live are kind of fortresses that are, you know, deadened to anything more than human life and culture, or whether we're going to create these enlivened neighborhoods where the more than human world can flourish. And I really like to reframe, yes, there are conflicts between, you know, pets and wildlife, between our homes. And, you know, there's absolutely all kinds of conflict that can occur. And I really like to reframe the idea of conflict into the idea of participation, of graciousness in a way, of evolutionary adaptability. How can we work it out? You know, it takes it's creative neighborliness.
I'm speaking with Lyanda Lynn Haupt. The title of her new book is The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild. And let's talk about some of the specifics. What, and maybe some of the extremes, like, is there, of the animals you write about, is there an animal that you would say is the most common in, say, the Pacific Northwest urban landscape?
You know, not necessarily. I mean, I think that the mammal that we all see the most is the eastern gray squirrel. So that's a great kind of flagship species for really for the schizophrenia that surrounds our opinions about urban wildlife, because I delved into some of the research about human perceptions about urban animals, and squirrels are hilarious because on studies, they are the number one most loved and desired garden animal, and they are also the number one most hated nuisance animal. And so what do you do with that kind of information? And it's true. People love them and hate, you know, and we hate them. We love them because they're beautiful. They have these fluffy tails that they swish around. They have those big brown eyes. They'll eat peanuts out of your hand. They run around trees. They're very cheerful, you know, and they're there. It's kind of enlivening. amazing to have this animal, you know, running around our streets and our trees and our cities. But on the other hand, you know, that same squirrel will one day accidentally bite your finger when you're feeding it the peanut, or bite the finger of your kid, which will make you even more mad. They will set up housekeeping in a corner of your, you know, attic and make all kinds of noise. That happened in my house. You know, the one unforgivable thing that squirrels do is they eat the seeds that we put out for other wildlife. So people that are trying to feed the birds, I mean, grown men go absolutely insane trying to get rid of the squirrels. It's hilarious. So yeah, so squirrels are kind of a good flagship animal.
And what animals in our urban wild area would be the most potentially dangerous these days?
You know, I mean, I think that if we act with good common sense, that there shouldn't be a dangerous animal at all. So, I mean, if there's a moral to this bestiary, and there is, it's the idea that the more we know and the more we understand about the wild animals in our midst, the more that we will, the better we'll be able to coexist with common sense, with wisdom, and then eventually enjoyment. But, you know, common sense and wisdom and safety is what has to happen first in order to lead to enjoyment. So I think if we are behaving properly, if we're minding our homes and acting with understanding, that dangerous situations should be very, very rare. So the animal I think that is perceived to be the most dangerous is the coyote. So the coyote is an interesting test case for the urban wilderness, because here is a beautiful animal that people love. We love the idea of wildness in our cities. And yet we prefer that our wildlife be a little bit smaller, a little bit, you know, have fewer teeth, be a little bit less carnivorous, be a little bit more predictable. You know, not, mm-hmm. We want it to be wild, but not quite that wild, right? And yet, here's this animal that's, I mean, just a decade ago, wildlife biologists felt that there was really no role, ecological role, for a top predator such as a coyote in the urban ecosystem. But now we find that they control rat population. Rats are their number one favorite food in urban places. Not cats, but rats. That they control the feral cat population, which allows the native bird population to flourish. And there are other benefits as well. So it's really a matter of, can humans handle it? And if we don't feed coyotes, keep them, keep that native wariness of us that they have intact, then, you know, the possibility is there.
I'm speaking with nature writer Lyanda Lynn Haupt about her new book, The Urban Bestiary. We're on Between the Covers here on KBOO Radio. And I want to say that this book made me think a lot about my own relationship to the wildlife that surrounds me. And it formed a basis for an ongoing series of conversations in my own household. If you would like to get a copy of this book and at the same time support KBOO, please call or click to join now. And we are joined now by Lynn and Ani, who can tell you more about that whole process and how to do that.
We can indeed. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani, and we are wanting you to call 877-500-5266 and become a member or renew your membership. All those things are possible right here at KBOO. You can also go to kboo.fm. And if you would like a copy of this book, and it's really great. I'm just enjoying this whole subject because there's lots of conversations about relationships about animals at my house too. We didn't hear about hummingbirds yet, but that's okay. The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild by Lana Lynn Haupt. And it's for the $60 donation, you get this amazing, this great book, and you get to become a member of KBOO. These are two wonderful things, I think, Ani, don't you?
Yes.
Yes, she does. Okay, that's good. So call 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. You can do that right now, or come on down from your to our little urban neighborhood here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And there's quite a few people who have done that today, and it's always great to see folks. You get to see where your money goes. Our palatial digs here at the radio station. You have a little tour, have a cup of coffee, come down and have a good conversation with some folks. Another thing we wanted to thank today, a group of folks we want to thank, are the restaurants who are feeding our hungry volunteers. The Roxy at 1121 Southwest Stark Street, Vincent's Gourmet Pizza at 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, and Canyon's Rib Express at 5410 Northeast 33rd. Thank you very much.
And now let us thank you when you call 877-500-5266. We have just $100 left to make for our goal for this half hour, and that can be done with your support so easily. Right now, just give us a call with $10 a month. That will put us over the top for this show and continue our trend of fabulous support during this first day of our fall membership drive. We are looking to raise $125,000 for community radio by October 26th. We can do that. We can absolutely, again, go over the top. You know how we are, in fact, over the top. So most of the days that you tune in, you can help sustain that effort right now by calling 877-500-5266 and keep us going in this 45-year experiment of listener-supported community radio. Volunteers are the heart and soul of KBOO. They do what they do. They come in and offer themselves to create programming and to do all of the support work that runs a radio station, coordinated by a very small staff. And we do it all with your contributions. We look to the greater community to pay a little money to keep the bills paid, to keep the lights on, to keep the equipment humming along, or shall we say, not with hums. And just going silently so that we bring you great air sound quality. Just give us a call and support this true grassroots community effort. Be a part of that connection. 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm.
You have a section at the end called Tree, and I just wanted to touch on how you feel trees fit into this discussion of encountering wildlife in the city.
Mm-hmm. So a bestiary is supposed to be a compendium of animal lore, and so I actually thought I was being kind of clever by including tree as, you know, a character in the city. But it turns out when I went back to the medieval bestiaries, and one in particular, that trees are often included in these animal compendiums. Their notion of science was very expansive. And so they envisioned trees as beings that had, you know, these branches that were sort of responsive to the wind, and they sort of personified trees. There are many people that have felt an energetic connection to trees, that feel a kind of communication with trees. And we know that trees do not have a central nervous system, but the way that their nutrients flow is, you know, a very energetic system. And so some people feel that they can kind of tap into a sense of that. And I think that all of us have at least at some time in our life, and we may have to go back to childhood, but I think we have all at some time felt sheltered by a tree in some emotional or practical way. And of course, in practical ways, we are all sheltered by trees. But I think that, you know, emotional sheltering or a sense of protection or sense of closeness to a tree is something all of us know. On a practical level, we know that planting trees is the one single most important thing we can do to enliven our cities. If we plant trees, native trees are best, but any trees help bring up the number of birds and increase the diversity of species in our neighborhoods. And, you know, for so long, we've talked about how keeping large tracts of open space is the most important thing. And it probably is the most important thing. But planting trees, even in a very dense urban environment where there's very little open space, trees will help. Mm-hmm. And we know that it actually affects our own health as well. When you're healing from surgery in a hospital, there have been studies, if you can see trees outside of your window, you actually heal faster than if you don't. Studies from inner city projects in Chicago that show that girls who have struggled with focus in school, if there's just one tree that they can see from their apartment window, they can increase their focus and their ability to cope with school, and their mothers have an increase in their ability to cope with stresses. I mean, these trees, do they deserve to be a presence in the bestiary? I think absolutely they do.
Just in general, from a, both a policy level and an individual level, what is it that we can do to encourage urban wildlife creation or sustainability, et cetera?
Right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of things on the community level that will require, you know, political buy-in and money. So preservation of park space, creation of green corridors between parks in city places, and the planting of trees and maintenance and repopulation of native trees in particular, and a more complicated botanical structure with native plants and trees. But one of the things that I want to focus on in this book is the personal level, that we do not have to wait for funding. We don't have to wait for political approval. We can take steps in our own homes and lives to sort of create the kind of community that will allow a flourishing of both the human and the more than human world together. So, I mean, minding our food is probably the most important thing. I mean, just make sure we are not inadvertently feeding wildlife in a way that will lead to conflict. You know, even something as innocuous as bird feeding can cause troubles. Mm-hmm. Like if people don't clean their feeders really well, birds, especially social birds like the finches, can pick up diseases. You'll see finches just sit in the feeders, mm-hmm. and then they poop in there. And then if, you know, you're not scrubbing it with bleach constantly, they can spread this avian conjunctivitis. Sometimes you'll see, you know, their eyes have these growths on them. So that's all spread through bird feeders really easily. The other thing bird feeders can do is they can attract rats. Of course, we know they attract squirrels. They can attract raccoons. They can even attract coyotes. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't feed birds. I'm saying we have to be thoughtful about how we do it. And if it is turning out to cause problems, then maybe step back. Making sure that our homes don't have entrances for animals that we don't want living in them. So taking these steps to minimize conflict is the best thing that we can do.
I have been speaking with Lyanda Lynn Haupt. The title of her most recent book is The Urban Bestiary. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. Thanks for listening.
Dada, dada, dada day. Thursday, Thursday. Come one, come all to the Clinton Street Theater this Thursday for an evening of Dada film and music. We'll be playing surrealist silent films and cartoons, and the soundtrack will be provided by you, the audience. So bring your favorite musical instrument, kitchen implement, speak and spell, tantric bell, hotkeys, or tchotchkes to the Clinton Street Theater, Southeast Clinton and 26th Avenue in Portland, this Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. Thursday, Dada, Clinton Street, KBOO.
At least the haggis arrived at a reasonable hour.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub.